The Zone is presented by Guarantee Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteeFoods.com.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you heading up until 2 o'clock. Mick Schaefer joins us an hour from now. We're going to talk some baseball here with Josh Kaiser, One Royal Way podcast. But before we do that, coming up tonight, 6:30 on our radio waves, the Eastern Conference Finals with the Comets playing it for a chance to advance to the championship series, taking on the Milwaukee Wave. You got the Cable Dom Arena is where it's located. We're giving away four tickets. Let's do that. Let's give away a four-pack right now. 913-3810-810, a four-pack if you want to head to that game tonight. 913-3810-810 to head out to that game at Cable Dom Arena, the Eastern Conference Finals. We got the game for you right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB at 6:30 as well. So caller number eight. Call number eight, four-pack, to watch that game tonight, 913-3810-810. Let's bring in Josh Kaiser to the conversation here, talking some Royals baseball. They get ready for the Toronto Blue Jays tonight out at Kauffman Stadium. Josh, what's up, man? How are you, sir?
Doing swell. A little sore from, I found a new peak of adulthood over the weekend, if you're interested in hearing about that.
I would love to hear about it. What's the peak of adulthood for Josh?
Doing 12 hours worth of landscaping in your front yard to increase the curb appeal of a house that you're not intending to sell or move away from. So my body is not what it used to be, but we are recovering and ready to roll.
You know what? One of the biggest mistakes I ever made in my life was doing a full day's worth of landscaping and not paying somebody to do it for me, because I have paid for it since 2018, August of 18. Landscaping, and I had the same sort of motion that I was trying to dig up a patch of grass and move it instead of just buying new sod. I thought, well, I'm smart enough and good enough, I'll just, you know, bring this and then plant and then move it over there. In doing that, I actually messed up a disc in my neck, had a pinched nerve. Ooh. And it still to this day bothers me. I went 2 years of not being able to really do much with my right arm. I've done the dry needling. I've done the cupping. I did the injections into the neck. Finally, like the fifth injection stuck, and it allowed my neck to heal a little bit. But that was from one fateful day in August 2018. And now I'll just go and buy the sod. That was just dumb for me to do. Lesson learned, but it's a lesson that I still feel every once in a while when I wake up. I'm like, oh, I can't move my neck today. That sucks. So I hope your body is okay. If not, I got some tips for you.
Yeah, it's basically just recovery at this point. I think we're good. There was no disc slippage this time.
Hopefully not.
You know, time comes for us all, so it could literally happen right now as I'm talking to you on the phone. Hopefully that's not the case. Knock off the wood, but that's, it'll happen someday.
I woke up the next day feeling fine, and by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I could not move my neck, couldn't move my shoulders, and I'm like, well, something's wrong here. Something's really wrong here. So
I'm not in the clear here. I might be.
What was it yesterday that you did this?
We finished yesterday. So.
Well, just be aware. Unless you did same motion for like 3 hours straight, which is what I was doing, which isn't smart, which was a lot of torquing and pulling on the neck, not the wisest move, then you're probably in the clear if you were doing multiple, different things. So I don't know.
We were working with landscaping bricks, so it wasn't the same motion, but a lot of pulling, a lot of torquing. A lot of torquing going on.
I know. I get it, man.
It was brick fest up in here.
It was a brick fest with the torque everywhere. You know what? That is that is peak adulthood. Well done. Now, it's really peak adulthood when you can't then move the next day and you have to have, 3 or 4 years worth of work done on your neck, and actually contemplating whether or not they need to have surgery until you find out that they go in through the front, Josh. And I thought, well, my job would prohibit you from cutting open the front part of my neck. I'm going to go ahead and say, no, I'm not going to get that fusion surgery or whatever that you guys think could be a possibility if these injections don't start to take. Like, okay, we'll come.
That's one of those things where, like, I mean, like, I'm no doctor. I'm not here to tell you how to do your job, but that just doesn't make any sense to me. So you're going to have to tell me in different ways, in a different way.
Yeah, explain it to me as to why it would make sense for me who talks for a living. No, I pay for landscaping now because I have paid way more money in doctor bills and
that's
the trips
the
than I ever would have if I'd have just paid for somebody to do it for me. So there
that's
you go. Now that we've got that figured out and out of the way, there is a beautiful patch of grass out at Kaufman. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, yeah.
They do some great work on that. Let's start with a wrap up the series against the Orioles. And wrap up the season series against the Orioles, thankfully. They are 2-4 against that really good team. And it felt like five of the six games they had an opportunity to win. They were in those games, and they blew a couple in Baltimore earlier this year. And then, you know, the game on Saturday night, the seven spot that was put up in the second inning against Reagans. And then, of course, fighting back, the offense did. You know, we sort of take assessment in the you know, state of the union for the Royals, but 22 games in, 18 games or so away from looking at it and going, 40 games is where you can get a real good feel for this team. Where do they stand in your mind 22 games in? Ahead, behind, right around on schedule of what you thought they would look like through the first, you know, month of the season?
I mean, personally, it is 100% ahead of schedule. I mean, considering where they came from, and you could say that they underachieved even for a 106-loss team last year. But to me, to make this jump, not only be above 500, but you kind of mentioned it a little bit there. I think there's only been like three games that you really didn't feel like they deserved to win, or at least were not in it at all. Yesterday was one of them. Another one was in the opening day against Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And then they had the weird one against the Mets last week or 2 weeks ago as well. So, I mean, we're talking 22 games. There's only three games where you don't really think that they came and showed up to play. And that feels really, really good. That absolutely feels like, you know, a change has occurred. They are ahead of schedule, at least in my mind. And things are looking good. So I think there are plenty of red flags to kind of keep an eye on, especially in that starting pitching rotation. But above all, I think we're in a good spot as Royals fans.
Where do you land on moral victories? And if Saturday night was a moral victory, should we be in the business of moral victory with this Royals team now? Are we still at an at least a position in the rebuild process to where those things, there's tangible value to them? Where do you stand on what the Royals did after falling behind 7-0 on Saturday?
Moral victories are, I mean, we're, as fans, in the business of moral victories. I think we want to see that corner turn, and we want to see how they fare against the good teams, and Baltimore is certainly one of those. That lineup is ridiculous. We saw Corbin Burnes, who was their ace. I mean, we went into that series knowing, you know, we could have taken the series. We swept them in Baltimore, so there's no reason why we should fear this team. We can compete with this team. And then your ace gets blown up in the second inning, first inning, and you still manage to claw their way back. The offense responds to such a large deficit early, and they're like, nah, we got you today. We're going to get back into this. The crowd was awesome that night, and, I mean, moral victories are not tangible. They're not a winning. They're a loss at the end of the day. But, I mean, Vinny Pasquantino talked about it at the end of the game yesterday that they felt like they left games on the table here, but it was good to see, you know, that they were able to come in against a really good team and give them a really good fight. So it is baseball, you know, any given Sunday, but that applies to baseball, whatever. But it was still very good to see this team respond to a good team and be in it for, you know, where they were, even if it was a series loss.
Yeah, I go back and forth on this because if there weren't expectations this year, I would view that as, you know what, they fought back, and that's good because, you know, they're still in it, and they showed a little moxie there, and they weren't quitting and just thinking that the game was over and let me think about what I'm going to be doing tomorrow or what am I going to be doing for dinner on Sunday since we got a day game tomorrow. Like, I'm already thinking ahead of those things. Like, that wasn't the case. And so if they didn't have some of the expectations or the hope this year, I would be more in line of the, you know, quote unquote moral victory. But I do think there is something to take away from that in terms of the overall series. And Vinny Pasquantino's comments after the game was over, I think are, you know, at least a good spot to look at for this team and way to approach it is, you know, we can have whatever opinion we want perception-wise outside of the clubhouse, Josh. I mean, we can think whatever we want. But inside the clubhouse, those guys looked at it and said, we let games get away. We are as good as that team. And that's one of the best teams in baseball. And we're right there. We could have taken both series from the Orioles. They didn't. So now figure out what happened. Figure out why you didn't get one more game in Baltimore, why you couldn't get one more game here in Kansas City. So I've sort of, you know, fought the angel and the devil, or they fought on my shoulder after Saturday night, of me also going, you know what? I am excited about this season. I do have hope for this season. I am scoreboard watching. So, yeah, I'm a little annoyed they ended up losing on Saturday night. And the fact that they fell behind 7-0 sucks. It's one of those things. But then fighting back got me excited, but then also annoyed when Isbell gets thrown out at third and you think what could have been. And now I'm like, moral victory, but damn it, I'm pissed because they could have won.
You're feeling feelings again.
Yes, I'm in a glass, you know, case of emotion here. Okay. I'm just, I don't know what to do with my hands right now.
And legitimately, when was the last time you felt like that watching a Royals game as a Royals fan?
It's
2017?
It's been maybe early 21 when they got off to the hot start, and you're like, okay, can they compete here? And then quickly you're like, no, they can't. No, they aren't good. But so that was the total flash in the pan. That was lightning in a bottle. That was it for that one. But like legitimately, I'm watching the game and it bats, and I'm trying to cheer while being a little quiet because the kids are asleep. I don't know the last time that's happened where I've cheered and clapped and it was like, oh, wait, whoops, kids are asleep. Shut up. Actually been a while.
Yeah, that was the same way. Like, it felt like postseason baseball, and I have missed postseason baseball so much. It felt like I was clapping and cheering the way I cheer for Chiefs games on Sunday afternoons and Sunday nights. And again, also trying not to wake the kids with my clapping and yelling. Very similar situation. But you want to talk about expectations. We both are on the record saying, what, 77, 78 wins?
Yep, 77 is
where we both fell?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we are talking now about, we lost two out of six. I'm sorry. Let me back up. We took 2 out of 6 from the Baltimore Orioles, but we could easily be talking about 5 out of 6 against one of the best teams of baseball. And again, this is a moral victory thing and whatever. But I am also in the situation where I'm looking at MLB power rankings now, and the Royals are not 27th.
Right.
They are not 28th. They are 6th last week. Now they're 8th this week. So is power rankings, they are what they are, but there are expectations now that are not, hey, just finish around 500 and we'll be happy. We would still absolutely take that as fans, but we are also kind of leaving the door open for a little bit of a shot at postseason relevancy at some point in this year, and that in and of itself is exceeding all the expectations that even the most optimistic of us have put on this team coming into the season. So it is a lost series. It is what it is, but I still feel really good about it.
Visiting with Josh Kaiser, One Royal Way podcast. I want to talk about the offense because it's an odd feeling as well that I come away from the series thinking, boy, the offense really struggled. Boy, the offense is in such a funk. Yet they scored 16 runs in 2 games. I got 9 on Friday and still scored 7 on Saturday, even though I would really like them to face more often Johan Ramirez. I think if they could face him more often, this offense would be amazing.
Just really more of
that guy. 4-pitch walks to Isbell, wild pitches, hitting Frazier. You know, things like that that typically make a really good. You know, the guys that in a Royals game where you have said the number 8 hitter got hit by a pitch, then there was a wild pitch, the number 9 hitter got walked on 4 straight pitches. You're like, oh God, who's the pitcher for the Royals? Who's this guy?
Yep.
Get him the hell out of the game. Send him down to the minors. Why is this guy in the game? This was the guy we were hoping would be the next prospect that could do something. That would be the conversation. But I come away from that game for some reason, not game, but series, of thinking, you know, the offense struggling. And maybe it's because of the hot and cold. Maybe it's because of the, you know, 9th inning/1st, you know, 6 innings or whatever in that game on Saturday night, and then the entire 9 innings yesterday. But how do you look at this offense that puts up 16 runs in 2 games the way that they did? They go 1-1 in those games, but they also have guys like Garcia, who's batting 174, getting on base at 220. Renfro OPSing it at 540, and Isbell OPSing at 467. Like, there are 3 guys in this lineup that just are not good. and they are black holes in this lineup right now. And that's not even including the Adam Frazier, which Massey's now playing, and not including what has happened with Melendez, you know, sort of coming back to earth and got a couple of hits and things like that. Where do you fall on this offense? And is there a real concern moving forward with guys that are just close to automatic outs when they come up?
Yeah, it is kind of a weird mixed bag of inconsistency. And we talked last week through the multiple big cellular interruptions.
By the way, this has been, knock on wood, this has been so much more enjoyable.
I'm in a different room in the house. So
okay.
I kept a real good close eye on my bars coming into this appearance. So
great.
We're going to give this a shot. But so far, so good. Knock on wood once again. I don't need pinched nerves. The inconsistency kind of went back to the fact that this team is very aggressive, especially in the zone. And I think I mistakenly put on them that they are not an on-base team, but they're currently doing pretty well as far as getting mm-hmm. on base. So I don't think that's it, but they are still getting very unlucky. They're still hitting the ball hard. It's just I don't really know what to make of it on that point. They're not really chasing a whole lot. They're not striking out much. They're walking in an okay rate. They're putting balls in play. I mean, it's a weird situation to kind of be able to put your finger on any one thing is to cause the inconsistency. But I keep also coming back to the fact that most of that lineup is still relatively young. It's not like it was last year, but it is still pretty young, all things considered. So I think it will get a little bit more solid in that realm. I mean, we're going to have guys coming and going off of hot streaks. And mm-hmm. It's going to be a roller coaster. That's just baseball. But some of these guys, like Michael Garcia, really hitting a slump. MJ, like you said, not really doing much here lately. Hunter Renfro, not his average isn't great, but he's been one of the better hitters over the last 2 weeks as far as like OPS goes. So some of those guys are just purposefully not great. I'm not holding my breath for Kyle Isbell to turn things around, but a guy like Michael Garcia, a guy like MJ Melendez, definitely has a longer history of being able to succeed. So I still think that that's still the case, but we'll have to see. I don't love the inconsistency, but boy, it sure does make for exciting baseball.
Yeah, the name you brought up there and in Kyle Isbell has been a conversation that, you know, we've been having on this show, not necessarily our conversations, but just in general in the show. Sterling and I talking about it last week as well. And I don't know how ingrained Kyle Isbell is in the plans for the Royals moving forward. I know it was significant and noteworthy when J.J. Piccolo last year talked about the evaluation season and said number one was Bobby Witt. Can he play shortstop? Number two, Isbell, can he stick in center? That mm-hmm. was really noteworthy because it showed what they thought of Isbell as a center fielder, and he's a really good center mm-hmm. fielder. Nobody's debating that. Nobody's yeah. doubting that. But there is it is really hard to play a center field at a level good enough to make up for a 200 on base percentage and a 250 slug. There is the greatest center fielder and catching everything out there to then be an automatic out every time you come up. It's difficult to make up for that bad of a bat. And I wonder, and I don't know when the Royals will, but I mean, do you think the Royals, or how close would you be to ejecting on Isbell and saying it's not working? He's had a pretty decent sample size to show if he can hit in Major League Baseball, and he's consistently shown that he can't. When do you eject on Isbell and find somebody else moving forward if this team is serious about trying to win a division this year?
Yeah, I think it's got to be relatively soon, especially with Drew Waters heating up down in Omaha. He had a really tough start to the season outside of a couple big, you know, extra base hits, but he's really, really calmed down as far as striking out. He's only striking out in the last 2 weeks, only 22% of the time, it was 20% of the time, and his walk rate was like 11%. So he is turned into a disciplined hitter the last couple weeks down there in Omaha, which, I mean, he's done plenty of times before, so he might just be what he is as well, but he's still relatively young. So with Drew Waters kind of knocking on the door, if not banging it down, Kyle Isbell is definitely feeling the heat from that. He is chasing at an alarming rate the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, so that doesn't bode well for him. It kind of shows that he's pressing a little bit more than you'd like and is not going to be recoverable if the pitcher knows that you're going to swing at whatever he's going to throw up there. So I'm probably decently close to punting on him as an everyday starter. I think there's still room for him on the roster as like a fourth outfielder, defensive replacement for a guy like Hunter Renfro at that point. But they also have Dairon Blanco, who steals the crap out of bases. So I was talking about this on Twitter the other day. Like, at what point is Isabel's defense better than the value that Dairon Blanco brings to you in a okay defensive placement, but a really guy who can steal bases? So from a roster standpoint, I think it's probably about time to get Isbell restarted somehow, if that's even a possibility. And if it's not, then he should be buried in Omaha anyway. So I'm really close to ejecting. I'm never going to give up on, well, I shouldn't say never, but I love Kyle Isbell coming in, and it's really hard to quit him at this point. So I might be the last one on the bandwagon.
Well, I mean, he's, and it's, this isn't, you know, grade school baseball anymore. You know, he's clearly liked in the clubhouse. You saw that in the dugout when the Royals were scoring and continuing the rally after Isbell's toot plan that he had getting thrown out at third, that when they would get a hit or score a run, guys were coming up to Isbell and cheering with him. And it's like, we got you, you know. If he wasn't liked, people would be like, yeah, thanks a lot. Imagine what we'd be doing if you weren't such a dumbass, you know. Like, he's clearly liked in the clubhouse. So there's some sort of a value that comes with that. If you're a jerk, you've got a shorter leash. If you're well liked, they might keep you around a little bit longer. But I think what he's showing is that he plays such good defense that, hey, now he can be a fourth outfielder. You know, is he a guy good enough that, you know, now he can be Garrett Hampson? You know, do you need Hampson on the team if you got Isbell and, you know, bring up Waters for Hampson? Like, I don't know what the corresponding move would be unless Matt Quatrero says, well, we're going to put Hampson in center field a few more times. Let's give Isbell a couple days off. We gave him the day off yesterday. Let's see what he looks like, if he can just sort of reset, you know, as Kevin Costner would say, clear the mechanism and then go out there and play and get back into at least having a representative number at the plate while playing really, really good defense. If he can do that, then he can stick. We'll give him a little bit of time. Then he comes back and keeps doing this. He hasn't really shown much of a propensity to hit at the big league level. At some point, you just got to say it's go time. And if they feel like this year is any close to go time, then, you know, you got to figure something out. And if Drew Waters is doing what he's doing down in AAA, then it might be time very soon. I'm sitting at the end of this month, Josh. I'm giving him a little bit more. You know, I'll give him maybe through this stretch of a couple of weeks and then make that decision if he's still hitting like this. And if Drew Waters is doing close to what he's doing at AAA, that I've just got to make that move and bring up Drew Waters and have him be my center fielder and see what happens.
Yeah. And I mean, he's probably going to get a day off today because you say Kikuchi is a really tough left-hander.
What's
so
that? I didn't say that.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm going to put the word in your mouth.
Yeah, you say. I didn't say that. I don't know what you're talking about there. Plus, this is a family show.
It's true. That's true. That's a great point. Sorry, Mom. you give him a couple days off, see where he is. The 40 game benchmark is usually where it's at, but there is plenty of sample size on Kyle Isbell. But 40 games, I'm totally in on giving him that much time to kind of turn this around. But again, this wouldn't be nearly as bad if he wasn't the only hole in the bottom of that lineup.
Yes.
You can absolutely swallow his value overall in center field, especially if your 7-hitter isn't hitting .230, if your 8-hitter isn't a rotating door of .240. So if this is a playoff team, Kyle Isbell is definitely on the hot seat, but if it's not nearly as big of a deal if there are multiple holes in that lineup. He's just the one. There's always got to be one. There's a Ryan O'Hearn. There's a Hunter Dozier. There's always one person that's going to catch the most flack for any kind of offensive woes. And right now, that seems to be Kyle Isbell.
Yep. Visiting with Josh Kizer. Tyler Duffy has been called up by the Royals. Another arm there in the bullpen. I guess the corresponding move with Jordan Lyles being placed on the inactive list, and I have no idea what's going on with Jordan Lyles. I hope everything's okay. He's inactive based on a personal matter. But Tyler Duffy, I don't know much about Tyler Duffy, to be honest with you. What are the Royals getting when they bring up this guy?
They get a guy with plenty of experience in the majors. I think he's got just under 500 innings in the major leagues, so there's experience there. As far as what he's done in Omaha this year, not that many appearances, but He's had a little trouble locating the zone. I think his walk rate's like 13.5, but he's also getting some swings and misses as well. Not very hard tosser. He's around 91, 92 with the fastball, but the rotation and the spin on it's really, really good. And then he's got a little bit of stuff, about five different pitches from him. So I don't know. I thought there was guys like Sam Long and Walter Pennington that potentially mm-hmm. made a better case to be added to the 40-man roster in this way. But I do understand, you know, bringing the experience in, seeing what Tyler Duffy can do at the major league level. If it's nothing, then you can cut him loose and bring up one of those other guys. But that's kind of what I think the organization is thinking about it. And then we'll see how Pennington and Sam Long look after that happens. But it's not a flashy move, but it is, you know, decent experience, decent depth with from the right hand, which if you're replacing Jordan Lyles, that's more or less what you were trying to get from him anyway. So it is what it is. I mean, it's one of the only transactions they've made this year. Still only like maybe a handful of transactions in 22 games. It's still pretty solid. So curious to see what they get from him, see if he can locate that zone and then miss bats on the other part of that. So we'll see.
Yeah, I completely missed that they signed him. It's now I'm looking at it, the Tyler Duffy from the Twins. So, yeah,
yep.
Been around a while. I'm thinking, oh, they call up this young guy, Tyler Duffy. I don't know much about him, so here's my ignorance. What are they getting in this 24-year-old Tyler Duffy? Well, they're getting a 33-year-old, actually, that's been around and pitched with the Twins for a long time. Oh, that guy. That's the same guy? So Babe Ruth and the Great Bambino, that's the same guy? The Sultan of Swamp?
We're really talking about Tyler Duffy and Babe Ruth in the same breath right now. It's very interesting.
The Colossus of Clout. Great Bambino. Tyler Duffy.
Danny Duffy's son?
See? That Danny Duffy is, wow, how old am I? Danny Duffy's son is now at the big league level. Name Tyler.
Yeah.
And wanted to spell it differently. So that's fun for him. You know, that's, I don't know if there was a falling out.
He's stepping into the major league bullpen. He needs to step out of his dad's shadow.
That's right.
But, I mean, he needs to end it with an EY instead of the Y, just like dad.
That's right. Yeah. It's weird. And now we do want to make sure people know that while we talk about, you know, him being Duffy's son, it's a stepson. Okay. So it's not his actual son. He married into the Duffy EY family because Danny is only 2 years older than Tyler. So it's not his actual son. So it's just.
I'm glad you looked that up because that was also going through my mind. This is a weird situation, like a Modern Family situation where, your stepson is only 2 years younger than you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm not going to call him dad, even if there's a fire.
Yeah. Not even if there's a fire.
Not even if there's a fire. Josh Kaiser, One Royal Way podcast, our guest. Josh, as always, I appreciate it, sir. Enjoy the baseball, and we will talk next week, brother.
That sounds great. Thanks, boys.
All right. There's Josh Kaiser. Great stuff from him. One Royal Way podcast. And we covered a lot. We learned a lot there. The Duffy's being related and Tyler Duffy not being happy with Danny Duffy being his stepfather. So he just changed his last name, just added an E. Also, is not some random prospect, you know, that was in the minors. Like, because I saw the news, like, right as we were bringing Josh on. I'm like, oh, they're calling up Tyler Duffy for the inactive. Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, what are we getting in Tyler Duffy? A 33-year-old right-hander that's been in the league for 9 years. Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, this is cool. Yeah. Yeah. What about, anybody else that they're getting? What about them, though? You know, I'm fine, then. I'll ask a Twins guy. Great. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. And Mick Schaefer will join us in the 1 o'clock hour. A couple more clips from Brett Veach that we'll play. Tyreek Hill was on the Million Dollar Worth of Game podcast. And I learned that there is a podcast called Million Dollar Worth of Game. So we'll talk about what Tyreek Hill had to say about L'Jarius Sneed. And Brett Veach talking about a few other things that relate to the draft coming up on Thursday. More Zone right after this. All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're going to spend the next segment going over guys we're just learning about that have been in the majors for 9 years. So we're going to do that. Every segment, we're going to bring up somebody else that's been in the majors for 9 years. And they're like, oh,
Chris Taylor.
Who? I know a Michael A. Okay, I don't know a Chris Taylor.
We'll see how many. Yeah. If it's nine, I'm actually going to lose it.
No, that would be great.
11. It's 11.
Oh,
sorry.
So close. Yeah. So close. Man.
Well, the COVID year.
Yes.
Yeah.
My goodness. 913-912-4810 is the text line. You know what? Speaking of that, that's a great segue that you didn't even know that we were going to do with Brett Veach. Let's play clip number eight here. Brett Veach talking about the NIL effect on some of the mid-round players and the effect it's having and some of the older players they're getting now in the middle of the draft.
Typically, when you're working through the fourth, fifth, sixth round, there's always interesting prospects and small school guys. But I think it's what you're starting to see is these fourth, fifth, sixth round prospects are a little older because they're staying. And some of these underclassmen that get third, fourth round grades, they have the opportunity to stay in school. And so I don't know if these drafts, and this will be a trend where they won't be as deep as they used to be. So, I mean, if you're a junior and you have a third or fourth round grade and you have an opportunity to stay in school and make money, you're going to go back, potentially stay in school. And so what happens is I think the drop off from rounds three, the cutoff line, I think the availability of young guys with potential that came out early, maybe they shouldn't, they would have stayed, they would have been a first or second round pick. Well, those guys are staying now. So I think the drop-off numbers are a little bit more extreme this year, and the players are a little bit older. So we have to work a little bit harder to find some young guys with upside that we really like. That, to me, I found challenging. And when we were going through the board, it was one of the things that I kind of like just instinctively thought. And then when I checked with our guys, they were like, yeah, these guys are a lot older.
So that's fascinating to me because a lot of times if you're getting an older player, you're getting closer to a finished product. There's less molding, but you're still talking about maybe older as 23 as opposed to like, I mean, L'Jarius Sneed was an older prospect when they drafted him.
Sure.
It's an interesting dynamic that, you know, teams are dealing with this year. The Chiefs, if you're looking at the middle of the draft, so in the fourth and fifth round, they've got three picks in the fourth and fifth round, pick 131, 159, and 173. So they gave up, what, a sixth rounder last year for a fifth rounder this year, which is a great trade. You got better value. Doesn't matter if it's a year ahead. It's still a fifth-round draft pick for a sixth-round pick. That's awesome. And if they trade this fifth-round pick this year that they got from the Cowboys for a fourth-rounder next year, great. And if they do that for a fourth-rounder, for a third-rounder, eventually that sixth-rounder will move into a first-round draft pick if they keep doing that. That's just smart business. But a little bit of what it sounds like there, like Brett Veach, it always feels like his sweet spot is the second round. Like that second day, it feels like. And then they are able to get some players in different spots. I mean, L'Jarius Sneed, Josh Williams, Trey Smith in the sixth round.
Isaiah Pacheco
in the seventh round. Right. I mean, they've Jalen Watson in the seventh round. They found some players in that mid round. And I wonder how much is NIL and how much is also, you know, the COVID year. And it's a combination of that. Guys are just simply older because of the COVID year that they have. And guys are getting that extra year. And if you don't think you're going to be a, you know, first or second day draft pick, well, yeah, the NIL might help, but you may not be getting that much NIL.
Sure.
Compared to what you would be getting if you were a fifth round draft pick in the NFL.
And we're close. So one more year, I think, with the COVID year. I think one year away still. I think it's a very good point. I think NIL was interesting that he brought it up because obviously that means they've probably seen that, at least a couple guys going back. I do wonder if the college football playoffs will have any impact going forward because now if you're a college guy, you think, you know what? Yeah, we weren't a top four team. But again, let's just say Mizzou, because I think Mizzou, K-State, KU's on the up and up still. So we'll throw all three local schools in. If you think you have a chance to make it, do you stay around a year longer? Not all the guys will, but what if you're a fifth rounder and you say, well, I want to win a championship at this school. I think we have a chance to make it to the college football playoffs. Is that worth it at that point to go back to school? I don't know how many will, but I wonder if that becomes a conversation now going from 4 to 12. I also thought it was interesting when he goes the drop-off. My initial thought was he means talent. Mm-hmm. But the more I think about it, is he talking about just potential? Because you mentioned if you're older, you're more or less a finished product. Is he talking about, okay, well, now we know what these guys are. Maybe they can have a larger impact year one, but we do know what they are now. There's no room to to mold. There's no minds for mold anymore. Now it's this is what you're getting in the fifth round and the fourth round. They're a basic finished product, and I wonder if that's what he means when he goes the drop off, not necessarily talent wise, but the potential wise. The floor may be higher, but the ceiling is a lot less.
Yeah, like these guys are older, and we're seeing that in these middle rounds. Does that make them? That's a great question. Does it make them lesser of a prospect, or does that just increase their floor a little bit? So maybe you might have some earlier expectations for this guy, not the long term plan that this guy's going to be. He could grow into a LeJarius Sneed in the fourth round. Like, okay. Although we are talking about somebody who was an older prospect when he was drafted. So that's not the best example to use.
And grew a lot.
Yeah. So it's probably not the best. Well, you know, LeJarius Sneed, he was drafted when he was, what, 15? 23, well, whatever, you know, sure, whatever. I mean, same thing. It's 8 years difference.
Think it's a little funny, though, right? I mean, we talk all the time about how this 23-year-old's a finished product and this 21-year-old has all the potential in the world.
Right.
As if, you know.
Well, it's like I've talked about a couple times that Xavier Worthy on Thursday night or Friday night, either one, because he's not going to go till Saturday. So Xavier Worthy, drafted Thursday or Friday night, is not technically – not technically, he is not legally allowed to celebrate with an adult beverage because he is not turned 21 yet until the 28th or 29th is when he turns 21 years old. Like, I'm not saying he won't. I'm just saying legally he wouldn't be allowed to partake in the celebrations and the revelry with, well, hopefully, I don't know, if somebody buys him beer, those who host lose the most. So you do have to worry about that if he's consuming alcohol as a someone who's not 21 years old.
I thought there's a rule where in certain states where if you drink with your parents, you have like a glass of wine with dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's – it wasn't anything in Kansas, but I think there's a couple states where that's legal. So I don't know if Detroit is –
well, we do it with my son at night just so he can, you know, get used to having dinner parties and dinners that are more serious, right? We teach him about setting the table, which wines pair best with which food. He tries different wines so he can start to grow his palate.
Yeah, how to handle it, really. It's more of a handle. Yeah, I get it.
That's exactly right. If he's ever on The Bachelorette, we don't want him to be the one that gets drunk and crazy the first night and gets kicked off. So we're just trying to raise him right. We're just being good parents. Why? Mm. Is this wrong?
Up next, Zin.
is it wrong to give your child wine? It's wine. I mean, come on.
It's grape juice. Come
on. It's grape juice. Exactly. Oh, man. I mean, once he goes through First Communion, I mean, he's going to be drunk.
He has a taste. He has the taste.
Then he'll be like, is that Arizona? Is that, that's from California? Okay. Because I tasted a little bit of the different type of grape there. Okay. All right.
That Welch's good. Is no longer for me. No longer a Welch kid.
Is that Welch? No, I'm pretty sure I taste, is that Welch's? Okay. I thought that was the case. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this hour. We'll talk with Mick Schaefer coming up at 1 o'clock. Hey, let's do this. Let's give away a 4-pack to the Comets tonight. Comets in the, playing in the Eastern Conference Finals. They are taking on the Milwaukee Wave. Comets are much more tough. They're much tougher than Waves are. Let's just say that. In fact, they can create a tsunami of a wave, but that is with the Comet coming in and taking it out. So I'll take the Comets tonight. Eastern Conference Finals, 6:30 tonight, Cable Dahmer Arena. You can hear the game right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. But let's give away a 4-pack, 913-3810-810. We did caller number 8 last time, so let's go with this. Tyler Duffy pitched how many years with the Twins? 8. So let's go caller number 8 this time. Pitched 8 years with the Twins. We'll do caller number 8. 913-3810-810 is the phone number. 913-3810-810. 4-pack to the Comets taking on the Wave tonight at 6:30 at Cable Dahmer Arena. We'll take a timeout. Come back. More Zone next. All right, we'll continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. Sterling Holmes, Dylan Michaels. We head up until 2 o'clock. We're going to give away two more 4-packs to the Comets. We'll be listening in for that. Two more 4-packs to the Comets taking on the Wave. So if you did not win either of the previous two, be listening in, and you will hear an opportunity to win those tickets for tonight's game. We played a decent number of clips from Brett Veach from Friday's press conference that he had that you heard right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We also heard from Brett Veach in the Kevin Harvick podcast that took place over the weekend. We found out that he is quite the sim racer as well. Very serious about his sim racing. I know he's a big horse racing fan, too. So he is a man of many backgrounds. He really enjoys to play the ponies, and he apparently is such a big NASCAR fan that he now is a sim racer. And in his part-time job, in a side gig, he also puts together Super Bowl teams.
Well, we know he likes the ponies because he always beats them. He always beats Denver.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yep. No, I like it. I like it. And I like how every once in a while he'll get together with some friends and put together a decent team. When he's outside of his main gig of betting on the horses and sim racing and trying to win some races that way. So that was cool to hear some of the things that outside of just Chiefs. Also, apparently, Eric Stonestreet maybe is in the draft room with them on draft night. I don't know.
It's awesome. So, how do we get invited to that?
Well, we're not Nick Jacobs. Nick Jacobs got invited.
Yeah, it's true.
At least to see the process.
TTP.
Yeah.
Trust the process.
Trust the process. He got invited to see the process of putting 221 names up there. Nick Jacobs has to take him up on that. Like, he has to take him up on that. We'll talk with Mick Schaefer to see how much Nick Jacobs has talked about the fact that he was invited by Brett Veach to go and see his process of how he puts together his board of, now we know, 221 players that are there.